Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Oh my God, shrieked 15-year-old Janine on her cell phone. That's it, my life is ruined. What's wrong? Her best friend Kayla replied. Just look at Kelly's blog. She's got Dylan's version of what happened last night. I can't believe it. And she began to sob. Hang on, Kayla tried to soothe her. Who's going to believe that? Everyone knows it's just trash. Not everyone knows, Janine continued to whimper. People read that stuff. And, she added miserably, who can tell who will believe it? And I haven't even looked at Dylan's Facebook page yet. No one will ever talk to me again. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about today's teens online? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest specifically works with the kinds of information and issues such internet sites raise. Dr. Kent L. Norman is an associate professor in the cognitive area in the Department of Psychology at the University of Maryland. He is the director of the Laboratory for Automation Psychology and Decision Processes and is a founding member of the Human Computer Interaction Laboratory in the University of Maryland Institute for Advanced Computer Studies. His research is on judgment and decision-making and problem-solving, particularly as they pertain to human-computer interaction, human factors, and cognitive issues in interface design. He is the author or co-author of many journal articles and book chapters. He's recently developed a course entitled Cyber Psychology and written an accompanying book, Cyber Psychology, An Introduction to the Psychology of Human-Computer Interaction, for publication by Cambridge University Press. Dr. Norman is married and has two sons and two daughters. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Norman.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
What worries you most about teens using the Internet?
That is such an open-ended question because the Internet is humongous today. We really don't know how many things are out there. And I think that's what worries me. It's so unknown and it's so changing. The sites that we're going to be talking about today only opened up a couple years ago, and yet they are so big and so ominous on the horizon of the information superhighway. So there are a lot of things I worry. I was teaching my class and I asked the students, what would you worry about the most? This one man immediately raised his hand and said, pornography. That is out there for everybody to see, and teens can fall into that. Teens can get into many different websites of alternative cultures and information that you just don't know is there. I mean, you can go into a bookstore and you can find some weird stuff in a bookstore, but on the internet, it's so vast and so much material of everybody grabbing for attention, not just people marketing products, but people that are promoting ideas.
Is it more compelling because it's on a screen? I'm trying to figure out what the pull is that's different from seeing it in a book.
It's so interactive. Okay. And you can just go from one site to the next site, just exploring, browsing everywhere. And most of our browsing, when we're looking for something, I'm trying to find an answer to a medical problem, I'm directed. But kids' things aren't always directed. They're sort of like, what's out there? What's different that I can get into? And that's one of the things that worries me, unguided curiosity.
Emails arrive all the time that I haven't sought out that you can spot in most cases as material I don't want to look at. But one time I did click onto something just to see what it was, and it was a message from Jennifer. And Jennifer was welcoming me to her site and all this, and then it was continuing. I clicked on again to see what it was, and I was so horrified. I thought, I can delete this, but where will it go when I delete it? And is there now a record that I went to this site that could either be harmful to me or lead to more material like that?
Right. And so I think that teens today really need to be aware of where not to go, what blind alleys not to go down. Mm-hmm. And they're inexperienced. I mean, we've been around, you know, dealing with email and spam for a number of years. So we can delete those spam messages before we even perceive what's in it. It's an amazing delete at a blink process that we can go through. But kids don't do that. And they will follow some of these leads.
we're aware of what are hooks that we just don't want to even go near. But do these things change and change and change so that the kids, when they get one, then there's another one that they never saw before?
Absolutely. The internet is the most dynamic, changing environment that's there. It's always trying to come up with new things. And it's mostly motivated by marketing, by online advertising, you know, paid sites. And so they want you to go to as many pages and things as possible. So whatever you click on to them is a success.
What kinds of behaviors are normal for teens online these days? We're asking this with somewhat of a shudder.
I know. Well, in psychology, we talk about normal and abnormal behavior. And one aspect is if you're doing the sorts of things that other people do. Well, those averages are changing daily. And so if somebody is spending 1 or 2 hours on Facebook every day or watching YouTube, that's becoming very normal. And if they're spending time on instant messaging, that's also fairly normal. Watching YouTube videos instead of television, that's pretty normal. So things are changing very rapidly, and what becomes abnormal are things that are very excessive. So one of the things that we look at now is internet addiction. So if people are spending all of their waking hours on the internet, or 40 hours or more playing games or social networking, then that becomes cyber addiction.
But 2 hours is normal in a day? This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so where does it get to be abnormal?
So what becomes abnormal on the other side is things that then would be classified as maladaptive activities or things that disrupt one's normal life. So if I'm not doing homework, I'm not getting sleep, then that becomes abnormal.
It just seems like teens have so little time that's not in school anyway. And if they have homework on top of that, or clubs or groups or lessons or whatever, it's amazing to think they would find time unless they're not getting sleep.
It is. Teens do have some discretionary time in between there. But you'll find teens checking their Facebook accounts while eating breakfast. The computer might be in a common area in the kitchen, so they can be on a lot.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teens online.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Kent Norman about how teens are using the internet's social interaction site.
Would you explain, especially for those of us who are, of course, a bit clueless, a little more about Facebook, MySpace, Friendster, YouTube, and whatever the other ones are? What are they? How do they work?
Well, these are amazing social networking sites. We use the term social computing now. When the internet was first developed, it was Internet 1.0. It was pretty much people had websites and you looked at that information. Today we're at Internet 2.0, which is much more interactive. It's the ability to click a submit button and have your face and your profile and your information all out there. And so these are social networking sites that allow people to put up profiles, interests, blogs, videos, communicate with one another through these sites. Facebook is an amazing one because it's mostly for students in schools. In fact, they pretty specifically say that between the ages of 13 and 18, you must be a student in a school. And so it's developed around networks in schools. It began in February 2004, and it's now up to 34 million accounts. The weirdest thing about Facebook, I ask people, what do you do on Facebook? And pretty much they look at other people's pictures. It's where they post pictures. There are a lot of websites that you can upload family pictures and trips, vacations. Facebook has outdistanced them all. Flickr, Shutterfly, all of these sites. Facebook apparently has 8.5 million pictures per day uploaded to its site. That's mind-boggling.
Is it young people or is it all ages looking?
It started off for college students, and then it went down into high school students and into middle schools. When we as adults realized that there were so many people on Facebook, we started wondering, well, can we get onto Facebook as administrators and as parents to see what's going on? And so there's an increasing number of teachers and faculty and parents that are getting onto Facebook. And what they don't want are kind of random people just getting into it. But again, their interest is in having as many users as possible. So it's really expanding at both ends. They can't go under 13, but they're certainly going over 18 and into college levels and up.
And what happens? So you click on and you look at this thing that you could have opened a book to look at. Okay, that's very nice. And you look and you see the person and all the details and whatever. And then what? You just go to the next person? Or do you have interaction with that person?
What are the pictures like?
So I can look at the pictures of the last birthday party. There's also an amazing feature that it has that if people change their profiles, you link on who are your friends. So you have a list of people's accounts that are your friends. And you can go to them and you can see their friends and on to see networks of friends.
Friends in quotes, you're saying.
Right. Now,
these are not necessarily people they know.
Right. So I have one student who in class said she had 752 friends. And I asked, do you know all these people? Well, yeah, sort of, you know, on a casual basis. Maybe it had been in classes, in groups. For the most part, when I look at my kids' Facebook accounts, they know those people. They know them face-to-face, in classes, in the neighborhood. And so those are real people that I know about. What we have to worry about in a lot of these social computing accounts are people that are not who they say they are. Mm-hmm. So they're your 40-year-old man who is pretending to be a 15-year-old guy and has nice pictures and all kinds of good interests, and then we're getting into cyber stalking. Mm. The media has had a number of accounts recently of situations of children being abducted from playgrounds or even from their own houses by people that they were chatting with online who they thought was some nice, attractive person I would like to have as a friend. There was one recently in Bartow, Florida. The girl didn't get up. They went into her bedroom. She was gone. They immediately called the police. They checked the computer, the hard drive, and found this discussion on another site called MySpace. And apparently she had all this arrangement to meet this guy. And so they found out through various techniques that fortunately the police now are developing to find out who it was. It was a registered sex offender. And they knew his name. They had his picture. And thank God they found her within 24 hours and about a day or two later arrested him. So there are some very dangerous things that are going on out there on these sites.
Is there any safeguarding of privacy?
There are ways. Facebook is good because it can set privacy levels. If you're under 18, it pretty much makes it so that people that are not in your friend network don't know you. But the problem is that you can click on somebody and ask to be their friend. And so kids need to know, don't accept a friend invitation by somebody that you don't know. And never give out any personal information, telephone numbers, addresses, last name. So, for example, our 16-year-old daughter has an account on Facebook, and she said, I don't have my last name on there. I have my first name and my middle name, and all my friends know me by those names, so I'm not going to put my last name out there.
So I have a question. This is an old-fashioned question, but if they're only your friends that are on there, why can't you just talk to them on the phone or get together with them?
The phone is so last century. Well, and actually, that's not true. I caught my son on Facebook for an hour with a phone in one hand and the mouse in the other. Mm-hmm. And they were looking at pictures, you know, hey, Daniel, look at this picture over here. Or let me poke so-and-so. It's just another channel of social communication.
What's poking so-and-so?
Sounds very uncomfortable.
I know. So there's a little button you can click, you know, poke so-and-so. And it just sends them a message, you've been poked by so-and-so. And they've expanded it. They've expanded it to hugs, tickles, gifts. But you have to buy the gift to send it to them. But it's a virtual gift, so they don't really get anything except a little image of a gift.
Is anyone making any money off of this?
Yes.
How do they make money off of it?
So they mostly make money off of sponsored sites and advertisements. Kids have a lot of money, and so they use their allowance money to go to websites that are honest websites to purchase music, to purchase clothes, anything that's out there.
I have heard some stories of young teens getting parents' credit cards out of accessible places
when
the parent is upstairs or in the bathroom and using them for this purpose.
Yes, so parents have to be extremely careful. First of all, I think parents need to sit down with their children and have some really serious discussions about what's going on, what you're using, what you're doing on the internet, and some guidelines. Never use our credit card. If you ever get caught using our credit card without being authorized, you're going to be in deep trouble. So you really need to be very careful of your credit cards in your home. Some children are very responsible, and they will do online shopping for their parents because they're better at it than the parents are, believe it or not. But some kids are not going to be responsible, and they need more guidance.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teens online.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Kent Norman about how teens are using the internet's social interaction sites.
We sort of put our toe in the water here with Facebook and all this. Are there differences between Facebook and MySpace and YouTube and all these different ones out
there? Yes. Okay. There are some places that are kid-friendly, safer than others. Mm-hmm. I had a student group do a comparison between MySpace and Facebook last year, and they basically did a survey and asked people about their impressions of the two different sites. And they're fairly similar in terms of amount of time and gender and things between them. But MySpace is much more open in terms of age groups and who can see what information. One respondent said, well, you know, MySpace really seems to be predator infested. So it's not really some place that you would want your kids to be at. It's fine for adults, but even adults always need to be careful on the internet.
So this MySpace didn't start out for kids?
It did not start out for kids. It really started out for social computing where people could put up basically their own web pages. And so it's much more exotic. It's much more varied. So a lot of kids are tempted to go to MySpace because you can download more music, videos. It's just a wilder place, let's put it that way. So Facebook is much more student-oriented. Friendster is another site. There must be about 200 different sites now. But Facebook and MySpace are really the top sites. The other one that I should mention is YouTube. And YouTube is more of a place of uploading and downloading videos to watch. And so kids will do a little home movie or do a little video log, just sit in front of the webcam and say, hi, my name is, and express some opinion and then post that. We've got some that do little spoofs and things. Some people will put up their own home videos of parties and things. And so that's a very, very popular site, and it restricts some videos. You have to be over 18 to watch these videos because they're a little more explicit, but it's really taken off.
Is this the 15 minutes of fame routine? Everybody can be important because you can do this?
Right. Now, it's also had its problems because one of my children really enjoys doing yo-yoing. He yo-yos and origami. And so there are all these YouTube videos on stunts and techniques and things. So I love it when he watches these because he'll come up with something new and wonderful. Now, then you can get into extreme sports like skateboarding, but there are other things that have been not so good, destructive behaviors such as fence plowing, of kids running into a fence just to knock it over, ghost riding that college students have done where they'll set the car on cruise control, jump out of the car, run around, dance around the car, and some people have been seriously injured with this. And so the problem is kids will do stunts and get their fame from that. But the problem is that on the internet, everybody can see that. So you have this massive distribution and many people copying this all over the world. Because the problem with the internet is that it's not just a dissemination to the people that I know, but it's to everybody.
So behavior that wouldn't necessarily go anywhere because it was really stupid is now,
right, now
out there for anybody to just mimic. How do teens generally become involved in these kinds of sites?
Well, it's the same with a lot of things teens do. They do it because their friends are doing it. You don't have a profile on Facebook? You're kidding. I thought everybody had a profile on Facebook. Did you see this video on YouTube? Oh, you've got to see it. So it's a lot of communication between the kids, and then it just takes off from there.
Peer pressure is so tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Norman, what would you want to tell teens about using the internet?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is to really think, beware of everything that you do on the internet. One, you should beware of strangers, just like any situation. Don't talk to strangers. If somebody appears to be friendly, make sure that they're a real person and they're not somebody doing what's called cyber grooming, which is putting on some appearance to be somebody that they're not. And unfortunately, this is a very common behavior among adults and almost promoted to, well, try different avatars, try different personalities, be yourself in virtual space. So a lot of adults will go to sites like Second Life and live kind of a life, this virtual life. And that's fine, but then when they start moving into kid spaces, it's a problem. It's like you're now moving into the school ground. You're moving into my house, and that's not right.
How can kids tell, since it's so hard to figure it out?
I know. How can adults tell?
Yeah,
it's very difficult. And so you really don't accept a friend invitation from somebody that you don't know personally. Second, don't use your name. Don't give your name out, your address, your telephone number in emails to other people. Just really make sure that you know who your friends are. And I would really encourage kids are going to be on the internet. They're going to be on Instant Messenger and on Facebook and all of these computing sites. They really need to practice netiquette. They need to be sociable. They need to be friendly. They need to be hospitable to other people. They should not engage in the sorts of things we tell them not to. Don't start rumors. There have been cases of people extremely hurt by rumors that get started on the internet. And kids are sensitive, and some kids can be overly sensitive. There are some accounts of suicides being the result of cyberbullying. Mm. And they just could not take the fact that everybody on the internet knew about some picture that got out. So we have to be very careful of that. I would also tell them to put their best foot forward. Put what you would like your grandmother to see on your Facebook account. You really don't want to put obnoxious pictures. You don't want to put things about drugs and alcohol. You need to stay away from that kind of stuff. Your favorite movie, fine. Your favorite band, fine. But a lot of the kinky stuff, no. So be very careful about what you're promoting. And these social sites can be used for many good things. They can be used for looking out for other people. To send somebody a message, well, I didn't see you in class this last week. Are you okay? What's going on? To find people, I've got 700 friends on Facebook. Here's somebody with 5 friends. Maybe he should be my friend.
For our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've just been discussing, what resources would you recommend?
I would really recommend the internet, unfortunately, because books are going to be outdated already. But there are a number of incredibly wonderful websites that deal with internet safety for kids. There are sites like cybersmartkids.com, netsmart.org, isafe.inc, safekids.com, and I've organized all of these at a website at the university, so so that you can get to these and other information about internet safety. And so let me just leave this last one, which is lap.umd.edu.
That's wonderful. So all of it will fall into our lap.
Is
that right? Okay. This is clearly a discussion that could go on for many hours. We are just so grateful, Dr. Kent Norman, that you were with us today to help us at least begin to understand some of the issues about teens online.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 350. Please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. And tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Okay. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.